Vodka O'Clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love of Vodka O'Clock Podcast from AmberUnmasked.com. Don't forget, we are labeled as an explicit website and podcast. Hopefully you are listening, either streaming, where you can get all the show notes right through AmberUnmasked.com, or, you know, maybe you've checked out iTunes and Stitcher, and don't forget you can leave ratings and feedback and stuff there. So, this is a first time for me to welcome Adam Nave to Vodka O'Clock, and it will be fantastic. So, Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, we've been having a good old grand time on Twitter, which is wonderful. It brings everybody closer together.
It's a magical little teeny world.
Yeah. So, one of the fun things about following you, and it was weird because I had heard of your comic before I, like, really paid attention to any of the names on the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm assuming that happens often to people.
I do it too. I think, you know, it's one of those, you like a book, you like the book. You don't necessarily hone in on anything else.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm trying to get better at that. And so I'm talking about Amelia Cole. And then when I, you know, of course, clicked on your name and searched for your name and stuff, I noticed that your Amazon credentials are, like, quite filled up there. It's nicely filled out.
Yeah. Amelia Cole is not the first thing I've done.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
There's a long, sordid history.
Ooh, deep, dark, mysterious past.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I used to do prose mostly. You know, that was where I lived, was in the land of prose. And then I was like, you know what? This comic thing might just work.
It's pretty fun, you know. It's a totally different beast.
Yeah, I grew up reading comics like so many people do. And it's one of those things of, like, you're always like, oh, I'd love to write comics, but I can't draw.
Yeah.
So, well, it's one of those little moments where you sit there and go, can I sell stick figure comics? Maybe not.
Maybe not.
And then it's, you know, you have to meet artists and get out. So it's, there is, mentally at least, I find, like, a large kind of mountain to climb to get there.
Yeah, well, that's why I find that I'm now going more into prose, returning to prose, if you will, mainly because of the challenges of affording a team.
Yeah, I got really lucky. My first thing in comics, actually, was working as the... Well, I co-wrote a story with DJ Kirkbride, who's an old friend. And at the time, he was the assistant editor over at Popgun.
Right, which
was an anthology from Image. Right. And they moved him up to co-editor, and he suggested me as the replacement, the new assistant editor. And now I had been, you know, I talked to DJ all the time, and so I knew exactly how much work this was, and kind of, you know, not a nightmare in a bad way, because I never want to sound like, you know, oh, woe is me, I had this hard thing. No, whatever, it was great. But there was still a lot of work involved. And so knowing this, I was like, but why would you ever think that I would say yes to that? Also, yes.
Your friends are trying to punish you.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, the editing Popgun, you know, let me really meet a whole lot of people in comics.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's a very renowned, award-winning anthology, so it's just comes up, you know, all the time. Like, every time around, like, the Harvey season.
Yeah, we had, you know, like, 4 years. I think we were nominated every year.
Yeah.
We won twice.
That's awesome.
You know, Volume 3 won an Eisner instead. You know, this is not a problem in life.
Yeah. Most people don't get to say that, so...
Right. I'm like, you know, when your first outing in comics basically, you know, sort of wins you an Eisner and then a Harvey, like, back-to-back, it's... You have that horrible thing of, like, now I have to live up to this, don't I?
Yeah, kind of.
The nice thing was, you know, we won them for editing, not for writing.
So that's pretty fantastic. So now you're the person that we all hate.
Right. Nothing new there.
So you were doing Popgun before you started to take a stab at your own, create our own series.
Well, me and TJ had some shorts in Popgun, which, just to be clear, anything we had in Popgun, you know, if you wrote for Popgun, the other editors would, of course, decide if it was in.
Okay. You know,
there was no nepotism going on there. Actually, I have my first, I think still my only, solo comic short work, at least, in Popgun Volume 4, and the first time it got rejected.
Okay. That's fair. That's nice.
Yeah, I admit, when I first got that mail, that they were like, nah, we don't really think this is right. I was just like, really? Because, I mean, I know where you guys live. What, we want to go down this road? And I was like, no, that's not cool, you know. Let me fix it. But, yeah, no, so we started right around the time we were also editing Pop Gun. But certainly, you know, working on Pop Gun and just getting to meet people at conventions and kind of having proven ourselves that, you know, we were people who knew what comics were, as silly as that sounds. You know, we knew what we were doing. Kind of gave artists a little bit more confidence in going, sure, we'll work on this pitch with you.
Yeah, well, especially, I think, once you've gotten, like you said, once you've gotten awards under your belt, if you approach an artist, it's a completely different ballgame than, hey, I have this creator-owned thing that I self-published that nobody's ever heard of. Will you work with me?
Right. I mean, you know, I write this webcomic that no one on Earth reads, that I often end up having to defend as an actual comic, which is a weird place to be. But what people don't seem to ever realize is it's called Things Wrong With Me. And it is essentially, there are six characters. Each character, there are four little emotions they can display in their little heads, and then some text. So it kind of reads like an annotated script.
Yeah, I did take a look at it. I wasn't sure if you were trying to go for, like, the text messaging, you know, fake memes.
Yeah, no, I've been doing this for almost 5 years, and I had the format for something else, like, 3 or 4 years before that. And it was always just one of these, it's a way to do comics that don't require me to know how to draw. But because the emotions they display do change how the line reads, I consider it comics. Because, you know, you have art and words working together in sequence.
That sounds like a definition.
Right? But what kills me about it is that Mateo Scalera, who me and DJ had worked with on a short that's in Pop Gun, was, you know, kind enough to draw all the heads for me.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And I'm just like, I have the guy who's, like, drawing Hulk monthly, who drew these, like, little bullshit heads for me on a whim one day. I'm just like, what is my life? Where have I gone wrong or right or whatever the hell we want to call it today?
Well, that's cool. So, I mean, you, because of Pop Gun, like you said, you got to meet all of these artists and everything. And when it came to Amelia Cole, I wanted to make sure we don't forget the massive creative team behind the project.
Yeah, there's a lot of us.
Yeah. And I know a few of the names, you know, some of them from Twitter. Rachel Deering, I know from her Anathema project and Womanthology, so I was not surprised to see her name in there. But so DJ Kirkbride, you know, from Twitter, and Nick Brokenshire, is that how you say it?
Brokenshire.
And you've got a few other people.
Yeah, well, what happened there was, you know, very simply, a friend of DJ's, Tim Simmons, who writes a webcomic called Spy 16, mentioned to DJ that he knew this artist, and, you know, he had nothing to work with him for. He had no project. But this guy was great, and maybe we should reach out to him if we have anything in mind. And sent us a link to, you know, Nick's page. And we looked at it, and we're like, we need to make comics with this man. You know, we'd never heard of him before. We just saw his art, and we're like, yes, please. And we got in touch with him, and, you know, we all clicked very well and came up with the concept for Amelia Cole. And somewhere along the way of finishing up the first issue, Nick had been lettering it. And Nick is not a letterer by trade. He's an amazing artist, not a letterer. And so we decided maybe we should bring on a letterer to, you know, decrease his workload a little, make the lettering look a little better. And I knew Rachel actually through a book she was editing at the time. And I knew she also did some lettering, so we brought her on board. And then partway through the first arc, we brought on Reese Moreno to do flatting and color assists for Nick. Originally just as, again, as a way to reduce his workload, because we all have day jobs.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, that's very helpful to have the ability to, you know, break that up.
Yeah. So, you know, we brought Reese on board, and he's just been growing and kicking all sorts of butt along with the rest of us. But it's a fairly large team now. It's
yeah, absolutely. You've got Dylan Todd, and then you've got various pinup artists as well. And
well, Dylan, if you look at the Monkey Brain books, when they first launched, there is a the front credits page, and then there's a back bio page.
Okay.
Those pages were designed by Dylan. And he designed them pretty much for, like, a standard Monkey Brain thing, and you can choose to not use them or change them however you want. He just kind of, you know, invoked this template that you could use. And we stuck with it because we really liked his work, and actually I happened to love Dylan's design work. But that's really, you know, there's no ongoing Dylan credit. He never actually talked to us about it. It's just he created those templates that we use.
Oh,
he designed
cool.
those two, the bookend, you know, the credits and the bio.
It's really helpful, though. I mean, for somebody to be able to do that, because it's one of those things where whenever I try to do something that's any graphic layout, I need to basically look at other examples and then try to recreate stuff so that it doesn't, you know, and yet hope it doesn't suck, because I have no training and necessary skills for these things. And it's like, okay, well, I just know that I want my bio. I want it to kind of be here. And fortunately or unfortunately, most comic artists at least have some sort of design training, because a lot of them have to do that for day jobs.
Right.
So it's cool when you can at least get examples or say, hey, can you help me out? Or this is how far I got. You know, how can I improve this?
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky enough with Chris and Allison, who run Monkey Brain, that they thought very much ahead. And they used Dylan to design the logo for the company, you know, based off the monkey with its brain showing that was used for the old Monkey Brain books logo when they had that company as a concern. And as it evolved to Monkey Brain Comics, you know, they had to figure out that, so they called Dylan. And he's done a bunch of, you know, graphic design work for them. I since hired him to do my logo on my own site. You know, Dylan has just a great sense about him for design work. So, I mean, you look at the credits of the bios page, it's like, oh, well, that's just simple. You know, it's just very, you know, simple and intuitive. It's like, yeah, that ain't easy to come up with.
Yeah, it's really not. And it's the same thing that why I think lettering gets overlooked, because people think it's simple. And I've been having a hugely difficult time since switching to reading on the Kindle, because literally half of the stuff that I try to read, not even just the Kindle, I'll try to read just, you know, PDFs on a screen, the lettering is bad. It's like it's not saved as whatever proper whatever it's supposed to be, and when I go to zoom in because the balloon is too tiny and I just want to read it easier, it gets all blurry.
Yeah, that's just a resolution issue, and it's something that, you know, you have to, as you move into digital, you have to become very aware of.
Yeah. And I hope more people do.
Yeah. I mean, look, in general, I want to punch anyone who dismisses letterers in comics. And there are a lot of them.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just, you know, lettering is so crucial. And the problem is, when it's done right, you don't notice it.
And that's exactly it. And that's the way it should be. It's sort of like, you know, when you've had surgery and you don't see the scars.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it does nothing but enhance the story. You know, it creates a moment of clarity. It gels the art and the words. It, you know, notes feeling. It can do all of these wonderful things for you when it's done right. When it's done wrong, there are some words over this art.
Yeah, or you have balloon tails crossing.
Yeah, just
balloon tails crossing is a big thing. Some people think it's okay as long as they show that one balloon is obviously behind another balloon, but that annoys me.
There are reasons sometimes you have to do it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, actually, it's really funny. One of the standard things that you run into, besides the serif eyes, which don't get me into that.
Yeah, I understand completely.
It's like a nightmare of mine every time I have to, like, proof any lettering. Because, you know, all the letters I work with, like Rachel, I work with Frank Centovic on Artful Daggers. You know, they're both great letterers. But every now and then, you know, humans make mistakes. And so it's like there's always this fear that, like, you're going to miss one or they're going to miss one and it's going to see print. And it's like they're all better than this. We're better than this. And it's such a simple mistake to make that it's just like a gut punch every time. But no, there are – the big issue is, of course, anytime you have a panel, you need the person on the left to speak first.
Yes. So you need to hope that the script is allowing.
Right. That, you know, well, and it's a problem because, you know, you'll have a shot and you need a reverse angle on the shot or like a, you know, a 40 degree angle off the shot. And the logical conversation, the way it breaks that rule. And so now it's like, you know, you go back in on your lettering pass before you, you know, hand over a script to a letterer, and it's, do you change it? You know, often we'll just add, like, a small line to kind of cover it up.
Okay.
You know, move things around just to try to avoid it. But every now and then, you know, when the moon rises in the east and clucks like a turtle, you end up with a situation where you actually do have to cross tails. You know, we're kind of overlay balloons, and everyone hates it, and it's only done in, like, dire emergency, but it happens. Like, everyone I've ever seen in a book I've worked with, like, we've had to justify it to ourselves right. and hope that no one screams too loud.
Sure. Yeah, because my other thing is I also like when the first person speaking, when their balloon is actually higher, like, that's just what my eyes do, and sometimes
right.
it's lower on the panel, and then you're supposed to, like, sweep upward to get the next balloon. That, I always read incorrectly. I always read it incorrectly because I want to go to the topmost thing, and yet, however they've laid it out, the topmost thing is actually the second balloon or the, whatever.
Right, and again, it comes down to just the art itself and the letterer working in concert with the artist. And, you know, maybe they're talking about it, maybe they're not. You know, if you have a good enough letterer, they don't necessarily need to stop and go, hey, I was thinking this. But there are moments where, you can pull it off. You know, you can always find those exceptions where the art is naturally pulling your eye down, so you place that balloon there, and then, you know, there's something that sweeps it up. There, you can always find exceptions. But yes, in general, it's a horrible mistake.
So let's talk about Amelia Cole and where she came from. Where did she start?
Well, she came from a little town outside of Pittsburgh. And, no, Amelia Cole, it was just, you know, me and DJ wanted to work with Nick. And we were trying to figure out, you know, what do we want to do? What story did we have in our head? And one of the first things we figured out was that we wanted a female protagonist. Because there simply aren't enough of those.
Okay, I was just going to say, and why? Okay.
But if we were going to do a female protagonist, you know, one of our rules was she had to wear actual clothing and be human-shaped.
Yeah, I approved of that immediately.
You know, there's no point in doing it if you're going to blow that. You know, it's like, unless you're writing Barbie comics, there is no excuse.
Sure.
And once we had that, we were like, well, you know, we all, you know, magic can be fun. And, you know, let's go off on this. And let's tell kind of a large coming-of-age story, kind of writ in that mythological sense. You know, like a lot of good superhero type of action fiction, it blows everything up in scale. You know, if we were just writing, like, the story of this woman who was just, you know, perfectly normal and normal, you know, lived in Kansas, it would kind of be the same story, just it would, you know, obviously not involve monsters. So... again, we're telling kind of a coming-of-age story, and along with that, we're all fans of Superman, Doctor Who, all of that sort of thing, and we want it to be very hope-based. You know, she's the type of person who does good because she can.
Right, and she takes, you know, a little bit of a, you know, hero's journey there where she has this, you know, older aunt, and, you know, so she's learning from this person, and then she's separated and off on her own, and she's scared but has to be brave.
One of our touchstones, actually, when we were figuring out, like, the early stages of the story, was a very coming-of-age, you know, thing, which is when you're in high school, you're a different person at school with your friends than you are at home with your parents.
Oh, very true.
When you go off to college and you're on your own, you have to figure out who you actually are. And usually it's somewhere in between those two. You know, not always, but there's a mixing. You know, you can see all the elements and figure out what works best for you going forward, and it's never a simple or clean process. And like I said, if you look at it blown up, you know, you have Amelia who has these two worlds she's in, and one she goes off and, you know, fights all these things in magic world and all this, and gets into trouble for it. And goes off and hides in this other world. You know, and her aunt is there to protect her. And the story starts when she's separated from everything. You know, this is her going off to college moment.
Right. Because of the magic, there were so many sort of like things that beautifully reminded me of stuff that I really love. You know, like you had your own fandoms that you were thinking of.
Hmm.
And like I was thinking of Sabrina and Dresden Files.
Both very, very good things.
So, you know, and like Sabrina in particular, because they did take her through the college years and stuff. So,
right.
Even Harry Potter, obviously, with the magical elements, you know, ends up places and buildings are destroyed and you have to have consequences.
Yeah, it's one of the things we always want to show is that Amelia means to do nothing but good.
Yeah.
This is what she tries to do. She is not always great at it.
And right, and that was a big thing with Sabrina, was that she was always screwing up.
Right, and there are consequences to that. I mean, and again, as a kind of coming-of-age story, as a, you know, this is what it looks like to truly enter adulthood, you know, that's when we make our most glorious mistakes. And how we deal with them is what defines us going forward.
Right, and hopefully, you know, everything's forgivable, you know? Like, at this point, where we leave off in the story arc of the first volume, Amelia has accepted this job position, and, you know, it sort of has this ominous overtone where it's like, dun, dun, dun.
Right, well, it's, you know, she's accepting this job, but she realizes, like, she has a great idea for why she's saying yes. You know, she thinks, like, this is going to be why I'm doing this. And, you know, is it a case of, well, that sounds great on paper, but, you know, in reality, life isn't quite that simple.
Sure. And, you know, and it's one of those things where we have that in reality when it comes to accepting jobs. Like,
yeah.
How I Met Your Mother was a good example. Marshall ends up, he's an environmental lawyer, and he goes to work for, like, this big, giant multinational bank that's, like, the evil, evil corporation. And, you know, he's like, I'm selling out, but I have student loans, and I can't afford this, and I'm getting married, and I need a house. And it's like, sometimes you sell out. You have your reasons.
Well, okay, I'm going to give you a slightly long-winded, hopefully not so long-winded that you hate me.
Okay.
But true story that I don't think I've ever actually told in public before.
Okay.
Back a bunch of years, you know, I was still married at the time, I got offered a job making something like 5 times what I was making before. Like, we're talking serious money.
That sounds good.
The idea was, there was this guy who we knew, and I'm going to date myself internet-wise, he ran a few mud servers. If this just gets blank stares from anyone listening, you know, back in my day, when we were out in the porch in a rocking chair, you know, muds were basically multiplayer role-playing games without graphics. They were just text-based.
Oh, the text things. Okay, right. I didn't know what the name
all
of
we had
was.
Was text.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know what the name
was.
All right, awesome.
Yeah, it was
I knew what they were.
Multi-user dungeon. Yeah, multi-user dungeon. So they're muds. And he ran some muds. And this guy was incredibly rich. You know, owned this huge house. I had to go out there once for this whole thing. You know, had, like, this is before, you know, like, Hummer started selling, like, the H3s and all this crap. Owned, like, a military-grade, like, Humvee. Just for fun.
Yeah.
Insanely rich guy. And what he wanted was, he was going to, in the next couple of years, start a few car dealerships. And, you know, I do technology stuff by day. And he wanted me to basically, you know, be their CTO for, like, a few different car dealerships. This is why he was going to pay me all this money. But for at least a year or two, until he got that spun up, my job was going to be sitting at a local airport that he owned, working the night shift, refilling planes.
Okay, why would that be your job?
Because he wanted to basically hire me and lock me down so that I could realistically work on the mud with him.
Okay.
So he needed some kind of actual job to give me in order to justify paying me at all. And he was like, see, this way, you know, you only have to really do anything like refill a plane or write something down the logbook, like, every few days, you know, every couple hours, once or twice an hour. And the rest of the time, you can just sit there and write. And so, isn't this the perfect job? And I was like, you know, this really does feel like I'm selling my soul for things that I'm not quite sure what they mean.
Right.
You know, just, there's no part of this that sounds like a good idea. Like, this is how horror movies start.
So, yeah, so your gut was talking to you.
And it was just like, you know, the money is really awesome, but do I want to end up in a bathtub missing my kidneys?
Mm.
So I turned him down, which a lot of my friends at the time didn't believe. Because, you know, why would you turn down that much money? I'm like, because I like breathing. You know, and it's things like that that, to wrap this around, it's things like that that kind of inform some of Amelia Cole for us.
Right.
You know, that do you make this big, weird, life-altering choice that you feel might completely backfire or not?
Yeah, well, she has very big, very huge choices. Like, do I close this portal? Do I destroy, you know, this thing so that I can never, you know, take that path again? And then, and some things seem easy, and it sort of balances that out, because there's, like, no middle ground for this woman.
No, she's not good at that.
It's either, hey, this worked, and it's kind of easy, versus utter destruction. Like, oh, my God, this is the most important decision that I have to make, and then 2 pages later, oh, my God, this is the most important decision I'm going to have to make.
Well, and again, when you're playing with, you know, like the larger fantasy and kind of superhero tropes, that's, you know, that's where you elevate all your problems to.
Yeah.
You know, you can go back and look at, like, the old Claremont X-Men where everything, you know, it's like, should I have another beer? I don't know. Is this going to be the last beer in the universe? You know, everything.
Everything. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you, because this is sort of like a storytelling thing that I'm asking a lot of people just online, and I feel that I am particularly bad at, but people always say, there's a really loud traffic-y noise going on, sorry. Other writers always say that they take things from life. You know, it's supposed to be write what you know. They take things from life. And I'm like, really, your life has dragons? And they're like, oh, it's a metaphor. And I'm like, I don't understand. Explain. So now, I'm writing Amelia Cole, and there are these, you know, persuasion demons and large things, and some people can fly and some people have magic and other people don't, and so it's interesting. So I was just wondering, when it comes to the fantasy elements, what was metaphor for you, and what was just like, hey, it's just fun, I'm gonna throw a demon here?
I
honestly
demon,
like your ex-wife, oh my God, because there was a demon lawyer. Like, demon lawyer!
The persuasion demon itself that shows up like in the first page was one of those moments where when we were first talking about the book, you know, we're like, well, we want to open on something, you know, action-y, because it's always more fun. For readers as well as us, you know. You just get right into it. And me and TJ were talking, and I think I'm the one who said it. I was just like, persuasion demon, and he was like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't know. this is the creative process at work. As far as, like, you know, what is drawn from life, I, again, remember that me and DJ write this together. So there are bits of it that could be from his life that I don't even know about. You know, and there are certain little bits and little moments and conversations that, you know, I pulled forward from other things that he might not know about. It's not something that we concern ourselves with. A lot of it is just, we really do focus on staying true to the characters over, you know, I really want to deal with this thing that happened to me when I was 12. It's more if the characters go down a path that, you know, we can look at and say, you know what? Like, this kind of reminds me personally of this one time. That will just kind of inform some of the emotional weight we'll give to it, but it's not a purposeful thing.
Okay.
At least with this book.
At least, right, because like you said, this is a bigger collaboration, so it's less personal.
Right. I mean, you know, like with the novels, with the prose, and that's why I still do write prose. You know, comics are going to always be a collaboration for me. I can't draw. So at that point, why not get other writers involved as well and play? Because, you know, a lot of my friends are writers. And they're some of the most creative people I know, and they have great ideas.
Yeah, I liked co-writing. I had a really great time co-writing.
But I can't co-write prose.
Yeah, well, that's...
Can't do it.
Yeah. It's done. People do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, people who aren't me do it all the time.
Yeah, I haven't done it with pros yet.
So, you know, it's in my pros, there's a lot of me hidden. I usually refer to it as lenses. You know, everything I write prose-wise, with maybe one recent exception that I'm working on right now, always starts with me needing to essentially figure out or talk about, in some sense, something that happened to me. And then I use a number of lenses, you know, just to cover it up, because the reader doesn't need to know that. The reader shouldn't care. They shouldn't be bothered with it. They're in it for a good story. So you just keep putting layers on it until you can't see that original kernel, but it's always in the back of my head when I'm structuring. But, again, the comics, because it's collaborative, they just can't work that way.
Right. And the artists, this was something that I wanted to ask you about because of the collaboration and the artists and everything. I noticed that you had a few sort of like Easter egg characters, little cameos in there, here and there. I spotted Shaggy. I can't remember who the first one was that I spotted, but it was something that stood out. I was wondering if that was just something like that Nick did because he was just feeling particularly spunky.
You gotta remember Nick. Nick is British. And this is something that is done all the time in British comics. Way more than it's done here.
Oh, okay. That explains some things I've seen in Warren Ellis books.
Right. You know, you go look back at like stuff like Beano, and you'll see this is happening all the time. So whenever you get a creator who's steeped in that legacy of comics, you end up with way more of it. You know, I think there's one reference that I asked for specifically, ever. And that's just, like, me personally, like, I ever asked for. And past that, they have all been Nick. Every single one. I don't think DJ's ever requested one, or if he did, I don't remember it. But yeah, no, they're all just Nick playing around.
Okay, very cool.
You know, drawing a page, and he'll mail us the page, and he'll be like, you know, we'll be like, oh, that's a great page. He's like, yeah, did you notice who I included in this panel? We're like, no. And he's like, do people pay attention? So there were some that we haven't seen. Like, I'll get readers who are like, oh, that was so awesome when I saw this. Like, you know, Wimpy is in a crowd scene.
That was it. I think that was the first one I noticed.
Yeah, and I didn't notice Wimpy at first. And he was like, you know, look at this crowd scene, like, all these characters. And we're like, okay, then we're like, oh, yeah, no, we see you put this here. And he's like, you missed Wimpy? And we're like, wait, what? Yeah, you put that in there? I know that Han Solo shows up at one point, Speed Racer.
Speed Racer. I did see Speed Racer and Han Solo. I was wondering what the Han Solo thing was, because I'm like, huh.
it's more than just the characters. If you look, especially in the first few issues, all of the store names...
I didn't look at the store names specifically, because I wondered if they meant anything.
Yeah, they were, again, they were 99% Nick. I think, again, like, one of them was us somewhere in there. There wasn't even a reference. It was just, we just named the store. But in general, all the background stuff was all Nick. There's a page where I believe every single store is some name or nickname of Mobius. Just because. You know, there's like Tetsuo's telekinetic pills.
Yeah, I saw those.
You know, yeah, it's just Nick having fun.
Okay. Now, I saw, we're recording this, by the way, like in July, near the end of July, and I noticed that... you have a sort of like a Twitter push about Comixology and that it's available there. So is that where, like, the only place people can get it right now?
Well, Monkey Brain Comics, specifically as a publisher, is a digital publisher. So all of the single issues of Amelia Cole are only available through Comixology.
Okay.
To that end, however, come mid-August, I believe, IDW is going to release a print trade of the first arc of the book, the first six issues.
Okay, that's exciting.
So
that way you have something
to take.
Yeah, you finally, you know, you can take it to conventions and sign it.
Yeah, it's the genius of the Monkey Brain model, frankly. They don't take any rights except for the digital rights. That's all they want.
That's sweet.
That's all they have interest in. So then we can go out and sell print rights to anyone we want.
I like that idea. And IDW has been doing really cool stuff that way. I've noticed that other people's trades have been going that route as well, plus some of the franchise stuff. And they're putting out all sorts of amazing stuff lately. Thumbprint and the new Crow miniseries. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, IDW does a lot of great books. And as far as, like I said, the digital thing, you know, I understand people who are like, I don't want to read digital comics. I get it, but I don't. Like, all the people who are telling me this are on their computer anyway. So, barrier to entry is gone.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the price point, like, I do understand, you know, Marvel and DC do charge, like, $3-4 a pop. They charge the same as print.
And that's what a lot of people are bitching about, and I have that even, and it's not just Marvel and DC comic books. When I'm shopping for Kindle stuff, and, you know, I'm looking for a new mystery, and it costs more, I don't get that.
Well, and I actually do because I study publishing, and I will not bore you with the explanation, God knows. But there is actually weirdly, like, a logic to why that happens. It's just a silly, broken logic.
Okay.
But, no, Monkey Brain Books, the nice thing is that they tend to be, you know, about 12 pages of story for 99 cents. The first 6 issues of Amelia Cole are 22 to 28 pages of story for $1.99. So it's essentially, you know, 2 of the 99 cent issues at once. And, you know, that's as low as we can physically make it. And at that point, I feel like it's, you know, we're not trying to essentially get rich off of this. We're not trying to bilk anyone out of their money. We're saying, you know, look, you give us $1 or $2, we will give you at least that much story. So I think people become more receptive to that if they know it's out there. You know, it's a quick hit. It's just 99 cents. You pay that for, you know, whatever app you just
bought.
Like
an app, yeah, absolutely.
You know, the $1.99, again, it's you're getting 22 to 28 pages.
And I've seen novels on sale for that.
Yeah, and I mean, it can be, the 99 cent thing can be a problem. Because it really does mean that the creator is making as little as humanly possible. It just does. There isn't a lot of margin.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you're talking about trying to make a profit in order to pay for convention costs and stuff, it's... And you're talking about sharing 99 cents or $1.99 with an entire team. That's pretty hard. You know, it's not going to, you know, you need your day job.
Well, yeah.
Unless you're selling like 100,000 copies.
Well, the nice thing about digital sales that, like, you know, and again, you know, Chris Roberson and Allison Baker, who are Monkey Brain Comics, have given this a lot of thought. And we're very careful how they approach this. And the rest of us have kind of been learning as we go. And they have, too. You know, I always feel like we're a few steps behind them, and that's why this is working. With a normal comic comes out on a Wednesday. You have your sales, and the next month another issue comes out. And you don't really sell much more of that first issue. Because it's off the shelf. You know, when issue 4 comes out...
What's the retention?
Right, and also, how much of issue 1, 2, and 3 are you actually selling? Because they're not there. They get harder and harder to find the further you go. With digital, that's not the case anymore. You know, people who are listening to this can go back. There are, well, as of this coming Wednesday, we're recording this now, as of this coming Wednesday, the 9th issue, I believe, will be coming out. And people can go and look at it and go back and buy all 8 right then. And you see that it happens. Whenever we release a new issue, sales on all of the issues spike for that month.
Well, that's really interesting because I know when it's a little bit different when number ones come out. That, you know, I've always been told there's a big drop-off.
Well, there is. And, again, in print, and this we actually found out this works differently, too. In print, if you have a new number one, you get a huge sales spike, right? And then issue 2, you have about a 50% drop. Issue 3, you have about a 25 to 50% drop off of issue 2. This is known math.
Right, absolutely.
With digital, because of the way Comixology works right now, if you get a new number one, it means you're changing the title of the book. Which means, see, if you buy... And we did change the title of the book, because it used to be titled Amelia Cole and the Unknown World. And, you know, if you bought that, you bought, like, you know, issue 5, and issue 6 came out, when you were reading issue 5, it will say, continued in, you know, Amelia Cole and the Unknown World, issue 6, and it will have a little button to buy it. And you could set a reminder so the Comixology would notify you when the next issue came out. So this helps your retention. But when the second arc started, we retitled the book Amelia Cole and the Hidden War. We were going for kind of an Indiana Jones Pulp Fiction feel.
Right.
The problem is, because it was a new number one, it meant that people who finished issue 6 of Unknown War weren't getting pushed to the new series. And people who started with the new number one couldn't see backwards anymore.
Okay.
They couldn't see there was this other series over there because they're not linked.
Okay.
So we actually changed the name of the book to Amelia Cole and, you know, renumbered, you know, everything past 6. And you can actually see that now they read, like, Amelia Cole 3, Unknown World Part 3.
Okay.
And, you know, Amelia Cole 9 is coming out, which is Hidden War Part 3. Didn't mean to use two Part 3s there. But it happens.
I've even noticed that, like, at the comic shop retailer level mm-hmm. for the actual hard-printed books, that sometimes certain books are very difficult to order, and this is why. Because unless you're using Diamond's checkout system, which apparently I hear is really expensive and stuff, like at my store they use a different checkout system. So their ordering system is different and it's not linked. And then when they get the download, the big dump download about the books to upload all these codes, they're not linked. Like I was a database designer for a while, and you know, you learn about things like normalizing your tables and you have to link these unique keys.
Right.
And the way that the retailer database works, it links on text. So if you change the title of a book, like if you change The Incredible Hulk to Hulk, it's no longer there. You have to,
yeah, no,
have to restart all of your subscribers and go, hey, guys, you know, I've been telling you for 4 weeks, if you subscribe to this, you're not automatically on this.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. But again, because in the physical world, the number ones get kind of this weird shelf bump. People will still be willing to take that risk. But like I said, with digital, we just find that long tail is so powerful. It's a weapon for us.
Cool.
You know, that we pulled everything in line and kind of went, you know what, we don't mean to do a new number one. We don't need to change the title of this. Let's just keep going forward with number 9 so that, again, people who see number 9 can go, oh, well, here's these other 8 issues. Let me buy those if they feel like it.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's because I don't really use Comixology yet. I've purchased like 2 things off of it, so I'm not really that familiar with them in particular. But other things that I've gotten, and if I, you know, when people send me their review copies and stuff, and a lot of times they're low res, I just get the PDFs, and then I have to upload them into the device and hope that it works.
Right.
Or if I'm reading just on my computer. So I don't know these things about the software yet. you know, I don't know what people go through as consumers because it's, you know, their Kickstarter rewards. Oh, my gosh. You know, Kickstarter
right.
rewards aren't going through any kind of app. It's like, you know, here's your PDF.
Yeah, it's been interesting. It's been interesting for the last year or so to learn how this all works and how it's evolving. You know, Comixology now has subscriptions, for instance, which they didn't until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. And that took a while. I mean, but they obviously knew that that needed to be done.
Of course. You know, they're doing what they can.
Yeah, yeah. But let's, so anyways, that's Amelia Cole. You find it at Monkey Brain or in Comixology and hopefully soon from IDW. So I did throw out on Twitter to ask people for questions for Adam, and we got some charming responses.
Oh, dear God.
But at least
are we drunk enough for this yet?
I'm on my second. Mm. By the way, I didn't announce my drink because I haven't named it yet.
Fair enough.
But I had purchased some Mint Van Gogh vodka, and it's been very refreshing this disgustingly hot summer.
Mm.
So I was like, oh God, what can I do with mint? And I had invented a sort of like a Shirley Temple that's actually got booze in it last weekend. And I called it the Temple of Doom.
Nice.
And so I was like, okay, what else can I do with mint vodka? And people were kind of like throwing out ideas at me. And, I'm just like, okay, well, I don't do Jell-O shots because I don't eat Jell-O. And, you know, basically I was like, okay, maybe some kind of smoothie. And then it dawned on me that what goes good with mint but chocolate. So I have basically like a shake of banana blended, and the banana is really to thicken it, blended with some soy milk and chocolate syrup and the Van Gogh mint vodka. And it's really thick and really strong. And I'm on my second.
All right, then. Yeah, I was just trying to kill off a bottle of rum.
Yeah, that looked pretty potent over there.
Yeah. It's way too much rum and way too little ginger ale.
Have I done rum? I'm sure I must have done it. Because ginger ale, I love ginger ale. I just don't ever drink soda anymore unless there's booze in it. But it's one of those things where when I'm really, really sick,
mm-hmm.
that's what I want.
Yeah, well, see, I don't drink pretty much any soda at all anymore except for, you know, the occasional can of, like, ginger ale. Because, you know, I like ginger ale.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I bet rum would, oh, this works really well.
Yeah. But it's so funny how sometimes when I go out to a bar, if it's not, like, a very well-stocked bar or if they don't really seem to know what they're doing, I just get the, you know, the Captain and Coke.
Sure.
Like, you can mix that. You can mix that and not screw it up, hopefully.
Right.
So that's sort of like just a standard fallback on, which I had a lot of at the Goblin Market, which was a lot of fun. So from the Twitters, apparently you have some sort of issue with Muppets.
This is not true.
This is not true?
What this is, and this was Daryl, I'm assuming, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Daryl hates Muppets.
I didn't realize Daryl hated Muppets.
Daryl actually hates anything that can cause joy.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about Daryl from the Taylor Network.
Yeah. And you know, I've spent way too much time with Daryl and JK back when he was in town recording the JK's happy hour out there in their bar out in Long Island City and getting way too drunk.
Yeah. Well, they're good at that.
They really are. But no, Daryl hates Muppets. He hates, like, the Adam West Batman. You know, the Batman brand from the Bold cartoon, he hates it.
Oh, that's
anything
exactly
that's just fun, Daryl seems to hate. You know, it's not serious enough for Daryl. So Daryl hates Muppets.
Aw. But, you know, see, that's just not fair. That's just not fair. Because fun things can be very important. Like, My Little Pony is, like, you know, one of my favorite books.
I'm, you know, and God bless Katie Cook. That's a great, great book. And Andy Price. I mean, let's not, you know,
yeah,
forget him.
Absolutely. And the Micro Series. I mean, those are all different creators on the Micro Series.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, just like Tiny Titans.
Right.
When I was just like, you know, people were just like, oh, I don't know what to read, and I'm so pissed at Batman and Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, go read Tiny Titans and shut up.
Well, yeah. So it just comes out that Daryl is just...
Daryl hates Muppets.
Right. He has a small black little soul, and he's trying to take it on the rest of us.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right. So, your delightful contributor, did you pronounce it right? Reese Marino?
Yes.
Wants to know that if he got you a cookie, would you return the gesture and get him a cookie as well?
It's true. I would.
You would?
Me and Reese bonded a long time ago over a shared love of New Girl.
Okay.
Which I have a deep, way too thought out theory on that show, which, again, I will not bore you with. I'm not
okay.
Too stuck for that.
Good, because I don't like it.
Okay. Well, you know, and that's fair enough. But, no, there is a joke about, you know, got me cookie, gave you cookie in the show, and it just constantly comes up now.
Okay. One of my friends, Joey Esposito, chimed in on this. He wants to know when you guys are starting your own Cheers fan site. Aww.
You know, not soon enough. Cheers is still possibly the strongest sitcom ever written.
Were you a Kirstie Alley fan or a Diane fan? Which did you have a preference?
It wasn't so much a fan of the characters, so much as the earlier years of the show were slightly more solid. It did have a wobble as it got older.
Yeah, I think that's true of most shows, to be honest.
It is. Weirdly enough, actually, when I was living in Boston for a few years, my first apartment was like two blocks away from the actual Cheers part.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was a valet parker at Cheers.
Oh, well, I imagine it must have gotten crazy once the show came out.
Yeah. I mean, this was, you know, after the show, I think it ended. So, or at least, you know, the last year or two. So it was nuts. But no, Cheers is an amazing thing, and Joey's absolutely right. We have to start that. But I actually reminds me I have to mail him about something involving Cheers soon.
And I think when this happens, it is a perfect point to then create CheersCon.
Why isn't there CheersCon?
There should be a Cheers. If there is a con for The Office.
Why isn't there a Cheers convention? Now you have me like look at. Hold on, because there has to be.
Yes, let's immediately do this.
Go to the Twitters.
Because there should be a Cheers con. I mean, there's drinking and pool tables and darts and,
yeah,
know.
there's this Cheers beverage conference, which is not at all about the show.
I doubt it, yeah.
Yeah, no, there is no Cheers con. Why has that not, like, we just have it in Boston. This is easy.
That should be done.
Joey, call
us. Joey, are you listening? All right, so moving on. Speaking of J.K. Woodward, our delightful pal who has moved a bajillion miles away. And
I know,
not,
right?
Not
what,
fair.
What's that about?
It's not fair. We miss you. He would like to know your expectations of the Ginger Army. When can we expect a strike, and how many will there be? And he seems really nervous because he says he needs a plan for this. And I'm assuming this is because you're a ginger.
It's true.
Okay.
And as such, I could not reveal such plans, if there were any, which I'm not saying that there are.
See, I was completely unaware that there was a gingerpocalypse coming.
There, don't be ridiculous. Of course not.
Okay.
Why would we warn you if it was?
Yeah. I mean, Pacific gingerpocalypse. I don't know.
You know, look, the replicants don't warn you that there's going to be an uprising.
Yeah. You know? I was unaware. Thank you, JK. I am now more informed. Alright, so, now, which superhero has the best codpiece? You told me you had an answer for this.
I do.
So I cannot wait to hear it.
The answer is, and this is like a scientifically proven answer, because there is a character named Codpiece.
Oh, alright, well there we go.
In the post-Grant Morrison run on Doom Patrol, I believe Rachel Pollack was writing it at the time. She introduces a villain named Codpiece, who, if I remember this right, was so ashamed of his own penis size that he decides to get revenge on all of humanity and builds this, like, scientific codpiece that can, you know, form weapons, like a big gun and such.
That's interesting.
And starts wrecking havoc.
That's
so
interesting.
Yeah, Codpiece, it exists. It happened at least once. And I have to give it to, you know, best Codpiece in comics would have to be the guy named Codpiece.
That's really funny. See, and when I saw that, I said my brain goes to this movie that I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm hoping that I'm remembering it correctly. Because it was so bad, I think I've repressed a lot of it. It was called Gothic, and it was supposed to be about when, like, Mary Shelley and Lord Byron and et cetera, they were all supposed to be in the mansion writing, you know, doing their little writing contest thing. And this was made back in 1986, so we're talking Gabriel Byrne and Julian Sands. And, and I remember trying to watch this with a bunch of guys. Who were, like, and the one guy was, like, really into it too much. Like, he was, like, this complete vampire guy. And I swear to God, at some point, I guess through their storytelling, the characters were, like, coming to life or whatever, what have you, or at least becoming apparent. And I swear one of these things was, like, this big hulking guy with this sort of like leather briefs, and instead of just like a cod piece, I think it was a big metal horn shaped horn, like just attached to his penis, like on the leather briefs. And I was
like, you do,
like you do. And I was just I'm pretty sure that is the point where I just went, what the hell are we watching? Why are we watching this? Like, I thought this was supposed to be a movie about writers.
Yeah, no, little did you know it was actually all about the horned codpiece.
Yeah.
Which I believe, actually, that prop later showed up in the Schumacher Batman films.
Yes, well, when you type Gothic 1986 codpiece into Google Images, you get Batman. You get, well, first you get Jared from The Labyrinth.
Which again, you know, see, now, again, not a comic thing, but if we're gonna go for like great cod pieces in history,
yes,
which sounds like a really fucking bad college course that you're just like blown off a credit for, you know?
Oh, but it, no, that would it's no, but the tests are hard.
Really?
Really? They're hands on.
Yeah,
David Bowie certainly does.
Well, you know, he had to keep the juggling ball somewhere.
He did.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
So I don't,
there was in my memory now, there is, was it Justice Society of America? Alex Ross was doing covers. And as I try to tell this, I will try to look this up to see if I can find an actual issue number. He did a cover with a character called Steel. And
oh yes, I see.
Yeah, like issue 7. If you want to, you know, go Google it yourself, people. It was not subtle.
Yeah, he's got quite the erection there.
It's well, you know, he's called Steel for a reason, apparently.
All right.
Yeah.
And this just takes me to the cosplay point of the conversation where Dragon Con is approaching and New York Comic Con is approaching and Baltimore. Gentlemen, please invest in a dance belt. Please do. We all thank you.
Well, you know, I mean, I kind of do like that it encourages a debate over what religion the Flash really was.
But should we even be having that?
Well, you know, you're working a table at a con, it's getting late, you're getting kind of, you know, a little woozy. There are worse games to play.
I wonder, you know, that's so funny. I wonder if that's why that happened. Somebody, I can't remember what forum it was in or whatever, said they knew what Spider-Man's religion was.
Yeah, that's why.
And that's why I totally didn't know. I was, like, looking up Spidey holding headstones, seeing if there was, like, sigils on headstones. I did not.
No, you went way too deep for that one.
I really didn't even think of that. Not even on my radar.
Yeah. No, that's the issue there.
Well, all right. So there we go.
And while we're talking cosplay, you know, I adore cosplayers. Actually, little known fact: if you show up to any con I have a table at, and you are cosplaying any character I have ever written, I will give you free things.
That is awesome, because...
To encourage cosplay.
Who was it, DJ that was doing it today?
No, Nick.
Oh, it was Nick.
Nick apparently got bored.
Lost his mind.
He really did. if you go to AmeliaCole.com, you can see pictures. I've collected them.
Oh, okay, that's fantastic.
Of Nick Brogenshire, our dear artist, doing, like, I mean, you were talking with, like, a blanket he had.
Yeah.
And some, like, scotch tape. Cosplaying as every major character in AmeliaCole.
Yeah, you don't need necessarily sewing skills for some of these because she does wear real clothes.
Right.
So if you're looking for the title character, but there are other characters. There are some fun characters, like Protector.
Yeah, you know, look, if anyone ever shows up like doing like the full Lemmy, you know, this 8-foot trash can, you don't have to be 8 feet tall, but if anyone shows up doing like the full Lemmy, let me tell you, we will be your best friends for life.
And I've seen people do the thing, so
right.
I'm sure it's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. You know, you just have to hope. But no, in terms of cosplay, with New York Comic Con, you know, on the horizon now, and San Diego just happening, last year at New York Comic Con, there was a guy, beautiful costume, don't get me wrong, gorgeous, giant robot costume.
Uh-huh.
It was too bad he filled an entire aisle.
Oh, yes.
I just, you know, if you're doing cosplay, just think about the fact that there are, like, 100,000 other people in the room.
Yeah.
You know, make sure you, when things are trailing behind you, if you're taking up too much space, just, you know, not saying don't ever do it, because sometimes the costume is worthy. And, you know, you really put your heart into it, and I get that, but just be considerate of the fact that you are screwing some people's days up if you're not careful.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty big props, like the video game character props, and a lot of the anime props are really massive. But then the wings. I don't know. I've seen people with workable wings.
Mm-hmm.
And this I find fascinating. I go to steampunk shows, too. So I've seen some pretty incredible stuff. But they're not crowded the way that New York Comic Con,
right,
where you can't move and you've lost the person you're with and, you know, you're doing a Marco Polo thing with your cell phones trying to find each other because, you know.
Except you have no signal and, yeah.
There's no signal, but suddenly it's like, you know, you've got like two different streams of salmon going up, you know, an aisle and small
right.
press. And small press, the aisles are not big.
Yeah.
So,
it's an issue. I mean, I don't know. I think my favorite guy with prop, who is a lot of the East Coast cons, he shows up. He does the most amazing Mr. T I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. And he
has this giant section of pipe.
Yes, I did see him as I was standing at the 215 Inc. booth last year.
But, like, he puts it places.
Geez.
Well, he puts it places. And then he picks it up when there's space for him to, like, pose for pictures.
Yeah.
And then he keeps it out of the way. It's part of why I love him.
That's cool.
Because he's never, like, I've never seen him get in anyone's way. And I'm just like, you know, you, sir, just win points for that, whoever you are.
Cool. He gets an MVP for congeniality or whatever.
He really does. But, no, some of the cosplayers said, you know, whatever, I don't always get it. I'm not someone who is of that mindset myself. But I really do appreciate it when it's done well.
Do you dress up for Halloween, or did you ever?
I don't, actually. Usually I'm working.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, why did something harmful happen to you on Halloween? Do you hate Halloween?
Actually, kind of. Once it did, but
all right.
My father, who spent time as a fire eater in a carnival, learned how to do makeup when he was there, and so he would, you know, when I was a kid, he would do like kind of elaborate makeup stuff on me because I was willing to sit still. And one year, he was like, "Oh, I'll make you like a werewolf," and did this whole werewolf face on me. We walked out the door. And one of the other little kids, like, you know, I was not a little kid at that point. I was, like, you know, 11 or so. But one of the little kids in the building came out and saw me and burst into tears. Because they were
Aww.
Just terrified of it.
Aww.
And I was just like, this isn't fun now. Like, I'm just making people cry. That's not cool.
Even Santa does, though. In reality, Santa gets a lot of tears.
Yeah, but when you're, like, you know, like a kid...
Yeah,
and you're making, like, the little kids cry. It's just, like, you feel horrible.
Okay. Well, that's good that you had a conscience, because other people would just find it hilarious.
Well, I've worked hard to get rid of it since. But, you know, back then, it was still a going concern. And that was actually one of the last times I ever dressed up for Halloween. Although, what, 2 years ago now? I decided on a whim. I found a site that sells 3-pound gummy worms.
That's a damn big, that's like a Ghostbusters talking about reference kind of gummy worm.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's like a sandworm from Dune going on there.
Yeah.
And so it was right near Halloween, and I was like, you know what I need to do? I need to buy this bitch, and I'm giving away one piece of candy.
All right.
You know, first person who rings my doorbell wins the goddamn prize. And sure enough, you know, me and my roommate are sitting around, and the doorbell rings, and... We're like, it's kind of early, so we're like, oh, maybe it's something else. And I was like, no, get the worm, just in case. Not a sentence I ever thought I'd say. And sure enough, it was like this, you know, little girl and her friends. And it was like, she was the only one in front of our door. And we're like, here you go. We only have one of them. Like, you win this prize. And it just fills her candy bag instantly. There's no other room in this thing for anything else in life. And I'm like, you know, but that's it. Like, you have to share because you have friends with you.
Right.
And she's like, oh, yeah, no, let me go get one. They'll want one, too. And we're like, no. Let us be clear. There is one. So I then waited, like, a day or two for her parents to come by and, like, knock on her door and be like, why are you giving her close to diabetes? Like, what is your problem?
Yeah, like, what were you thinking? Are you some kind of weirdo? We are never coming back to your house. We have made note of this address.
Right, like the cop showing up. Just, luckily that didn't happen. But was definitely a possibility.
Oh, my goodness. Well, those are some good stories. Adam, it was so great having you on the show.
That was a fun time.
Good. Good. And is there anything else that we need to know? Are you hitting any conventions?
Not officially until Baltimore, although, you know, Baltimore is going to be huge. We're actually getting Nick in for the first time in the U.S.
Awesome. I will be there.
And DJ is going to be there, and Reese. We're just Rachel short of having the full team.
Awesome. Okay.
And I think we'll actually also have Sean Williams, who co-writes Artful Daggers with me, also a Monkey Brain title.
Okay.
So it's going to be, you know, a big, interesting show.
And where can people find information about you?
I am easily stalkable.
All right.
You can go to adampnave.com. I'm adampnave on Twitter. You'll sense a theme here pretty soon. anywhere you go, generally it's just going to be adampnave something, and there you are. So, really easy to find.
All right. And like we said, there's the Monkey Brain website for the individual issues. IDW is going to be coming out with the print collection for Volume 1 of Amelia Cole. Lots of good stuff coming your way. But you guys, you know, you had a great team. I enjoyed the book. I look forward to the next volume. All right. Well, everybody, this has been a delightful chat. Usually, you know, we just never know what we're going to get. This is, you know... And I love that there was audience participation. I absolutely adore audience participation. So, you know, don't forget, wear your dance belt. And cheers. but you can, of course, follow me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter and amberonmath.com. And don't forget to, you know, give me some feedback. But, of course, you know, make sure that it's with lots of love and joy. Because we work really hard on this and... you know, I get great guys like Adam to come on and, you know, give me parts of their lives. He could be off doing other things. So be sure to let me know how much you loved it. All right, have a great night, everybody.